ABC News, World News This Week. And I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
Is there a plan or an instinct on the part of the administration to undertake a military operation directly in Nicaragua? The answer is no.
We believe it's unconstitutional. It entangles the U.S. government in the internal affairs of the Catholic Church. It constitutes preferential treatment for one religious body.
Premier Zhao, you are the first Chinese head of government to visit the United States, and we're honored to welcome you.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Everyone loves the laughter of a beautiful baby. There is the joy that comes in knowing that someone so tiny and helpless can share such wonderful feelings. I'm Evelyn King for the March of Dimes. That's the way it should be for all babies. Born perfectly healthy, growing and sharing the gift of love. But that joy can sometimes be shattered. More than 250,000 infants are born in the United States each year with mental or physical birth defects. Birth defects can strike any family, and the emotional, social, and economic burdens can be devastating. The March of Dimes is dedicated to prevention of birth defects. It helps to save babies through support of scientific research, education, and medical services. Please help safeguard the joy and laughter of healthy babies. Give generously to the March of Dimes.
For the first time since joint U.S. and Honduran war games began in Honduras last summer, an American serviceman has been killed. It happened this past Wednesday when a U.S. helicopter with three men aboard made a forced landing along the Honduran border with Nicaragua. Michael Birch is with the Pentagon.
The helicopter sat down on a road that was clearly within Honduran space. The pilot got out of the craft and was in good shape, and he was killed by ground fire from the Nicaraguan side of the border while he was clearly in Honduran territory.
The Sandinista government said its troops had fired on a helicopter in the area, but did not say anything about killing a crew member. Nicaraguan soldiers were quoted as saying they had continued firing after the chopper had landed and that the crew had its hands in the air. The White House called the attack reckless and unprovoked, and Secretary of State George Shultz told a news conference,
"We have protested both here and in Nicaragua, and we're waiting to see the response and the results of whatever investigation the Nicaraguans make. But it is not a kind of behavior that is a tolerable kind of behavior."
For its part, the Sandinista government deplored the incident, but blamed it on U.S. military presence in Central America. Shultz was asked about retaliation.
Is there a plan or an instinct on the part of the administration to undertake a military operation directly in Nicaragua? The answer is no.
The incident, which killed Chief Warrant Officer Jeffrey Schwab of Joliet, Illinois, came on the same day as President Reagan's Special Commission on Central America reported to the White House. In brief, the 132-page report concluded that U.S. security in the area is being challenged by a Soviet-Cuban alliance, and the panel recommended a quick infusion of military aid to El Salvador and a five-year, $8 billion economic aid program for the region. As Commission Chairman Henry Kissinger assessed the approach,
"It is not appropriate to say that it is essentially economic, or essentially military, or essentially political, and that one should try one of these approaches to the exclusion of the other. We either do them all, or we won't be able to make any of them work."
The panel was not unanimous in agreeing with all parts of the report. For instance, while the report called for plans to help ease unemployment and to provide better education in Central America, Commission member Henry Cisneros made this point.
"I think that as long as we're engaged in a war with the Nicaraguans, it's very difficult for the peace points laid out in the document to ever be effective."
The aid package could have a hard time clearing Congress. Earlier in the week, there was another American fatality in the Middle East. It was another Marine, Corporal Edward Gargano of Quincy, Massachusetts. Gargano was killed as he and some other Marines were fired upon as they got out of a helicopter in downtown Beirut. 262 American servicemen have been killed since the first contingent of so-called peacekeepers arrived in Lebanon 17 months ago. Arriving back from Lebanon this week, Senator John Tower, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, has been assessing the U.S. military role there, and he told reporters on Capitol Hill,
"Based on our meetings with officials in the region, it's absolutely clear that a withdrawal of U.S. forces from Lebanon, particularly a congressionally mandated withdrawal, without substantial evidence of diplomatic success, would have a disastrous effect upon continued U.S. influence throughout the vitally important Middle East and perhaps elsewhere.
Tower also doesn't think that moving the Marines from their headquarters at Beirut Airport will make them any safer. For Navy Lieutenant Robert Goodman, the flyer recently released by the Syrians, a happy reunion in his hometown of Portsmouth, New Hampshire this week. His old high school was jammed as he told the crowd the feeling he got when thousands of letters were mailed to him.
For about 3 days, I thought, holy smokes, how did I get myself into this situation? I'm in over my head, and I'm going to be here forever, you know? After about a week, that feeling changed to a feeling of I don't know if you could call it pride, but it was a feeling that somebody felt that mission was important enough.
In Detroit, the man who engineered Goodman's release, Reverend Jesse Jackson, was cheered by some 6,000 well-wishers. It was the biggest gathering Jackson has addressed since starting his run for the Democratic presidential nomination. A joint announcement from Washington and from Rome this week that after 117 years, the United States and the Vatican would resume full diplomatic relations. The step was described by administration officials as aimed at improving communications at a time when Pope John Paul has become more and more involved in world affairs. But the announcement also touched off strong opposition from Protestant, Jewish, and civil liberties groups. Al Menendez is with the organization called Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
We believe it's unconstitutional. It entangles the U.S. government in the internal affairs of the Catholic Church. It constitutes preferential treatment for one religious body.
At the State Department, spokesman John Hughes rejects the constitutional argument Menendez made.
That's not a violation of church and state because for a long time we recognized the Holy See as having an international personality distinct from the Roman Catholic Church. This relationship will be with the Holy See. The Holy See is distinct from the Catholic Church.
A longtime friend, President Reagan's, William Wilson, has been nominated to be the new ambassador. Wilson's been serving as the president's special representative to the Vatican since 1981. The national anthem of the People's Republic of China welcomed that country's highest-ranking official to Washington last Tuesday.
Premier Zhao, you are the first Chinese head of government to visit the United States, and we're honored to welcome you.
President Reagan told the premier at a state dinner that the U.S. and China stood on common ground in the quest for peace and in opposition to Soviet expansionism. Zhao, on the other hand, told the president he thought U.S. and Chinese relations were below the level they should have attained by now. At a dinner the next night, Zhao made another point through his interpreter.
There exists a serious obstacle in the way of Sino-U.S. relations, namely the question of Taiwan. Normal relations between states can only be based on mutual respect for territorial integrity and sovereignty, and non-interference in each other's internal affairs.
Although differences like that remain, Mr. Reagan and Zhao did sign some agreements to expand cooperation in science and technology. ABC Sam Donaldson assesses their importance.
The main point of these two agreements is the atmospherics. It demonstrates that China and the United States are pursuing their relationship. The relationship is improving, notwithstanding the big irritant of Taiwan. And this ceremony this morning is designed simply to show that in pictures as well as in deeds to some extent.
The Chinese premier wrapped up the week with visits to San Francisco and New York. The administration had been hoping that consumers would help spend the U.S. out of its recession, and judging by final figures for 1983, that's pretty much what happened. Retail sales for the year were up 9%. Another plus sign was the 1983 increase in wholesale prices. Correspondent Tony Sargent has those figures.
For all of 1983, wholesale prices rose just 0.6%, the smallest rise in 19 years. The main cause was the world oversupply of oil from the recession and last winter's mild heating season. But tame wholesale food prices through much of last year also helped. In December, food ready for grocers' shelves rose moderately on higher prices for red meats and poultry. Fruit and vegetable prices were down because effects of the Florida freeze had not registered yet on this index. December energy costs posted another drop at wholesale, with heating oil and gasoline both down more than 1%. Tony Sargent, ABC News, Washington.
A presidential commission looking into the problem of hunger in America handed in its final report this week. It concluded that hunger does persist, but panel member John Razian went on to say,
the vast majority of low-income people, the private and public parts of the income maintenance and food assistance efforts are available and sufficient for those who take advantage of them. We have not been able to substantiate allegations of rampant hunger.
The panel also said that administration cutbacks have not harmed the poor. Anti-poverty and religious groups generally criticized the report, with Ruth Flower of the Interfaith Action for Economic Justice saying,
I think this task force had every opportunity to document hunger in the United States to a substantial degree and to recommend some substantial increases in the food programs. They did, in fact, in their report say that there were 35 to 40% of the population that were eligible for food stamps that are not being served. Yet among their recommendations, there is nothing to say that there should be substantial increases in the food stamp program.
The Commission has recommended several changes in the food stamp program which would ease eligibility requirements and increase benefits. One recommendation, which is controversial, involves giving states federal money to run their own food assistance programs. Controversial, too, has been the debate over cholesterol's link to heart disease. But this week, Dr. Robert Levy of the National Institutes of Health said 10 years of study has confirmed what was suspected.
The greater the cholesterol reduction, the greater the reduction in heart attack and death.
In fact, a 25% reduction in blood cholesterol can cut the risk of a person's getting heart disease by one half. How to do that? Correspondent George Strait suggests the following.
The vast majority of Americans can control their cholesterol levels with only diet, such as eating red meat only three times a week, cooking with vegetable oils, and drinking skim instead of whole milk. This is not a cure, but a careful diet can, in just a few weeks, dramatically lower a person's cholesterol levels and thereby dramatically lower their risk of contracting or even dying from heart disease.
Strait also says reducing cholesterol reduces chances of getting the severe chest pain known as angina. NutraSweet is used in many diet drinks because it doesn't have the aftertaste associated with saccharin. But the saccharin is still there, and a consumer group called the Center for Science in the Public Interest thinks not mentioning that is deceptive. Mitch Zeller is the group's attorney.
We have called on the Federal Trade Commission to require that any time that the ads make the NutraSweet claim, that the ads also be required to disclose the presence of saccharin. So it's a trigger mechanism. If they say NutraSweet, they have to say saccharin. That way the public is able to make an informed choice.
This because saccharin has been linked to cancer in lab animals. The products now using NutraSweet are Diet Coke, Diet Pepsi, and Diet Rite. A spokesman for Coca-Cola denies any deception. Several notable cases before the Supreme Court this week. In one, the court reinstated a $10 million negligence award won by the three children of the late Karen Silkwood. The Silkwood family had sued the company she worked for, Kerr McGee, claiming she'd been contaminated by radioactive plutonium. They were awarded the $10 million, but an appeals court threw out the award. This week's Supreme Court decision is aimed at making nuclear power plants more accountable for accidents or mistakes. Bill Paul is the lawyer for Kerr McGee.
The amount has been challenged from the beginning, and we will continue to challenge it. Our preliminary challenge, however, is that there's no basis for any punitive damages.
The decision in the Silkwood case was close, 5-4, and by the same margin, the Supreme Court gave the government a free hand to sell offshore oil and gas leases without considering the environmental policies of the states involved. Trent Orr of the Natural Resources Defense Council, an environmental group, says that while he's disappointed, the fight isn't over.
I think what this probably means, though, is that we'll be returning to Congress and trying to see if we can get them to do what we think the law, what we thought the law said, and what the court has now held that it doesn't say, which is to give states a significant role in federal oil leasing decisions off their coast.
The decision does not mean that any drilling planned can start right away. The justices also agreed to decide whether private membership groups that deal with the public, such as the JCs, have a right to exclude members on the basis of their sex. The decision comes as national JC officials voted to revoke the charter of the St. Paul, Minnesota chapter because it offered full membership status to women. The JCs are a men-only group, but the St. Paul chapter has a woman president, Ann Ford Nelson.
I guess I'm not too surprised by the vote. We
are going to be the community business leaders. We're simply changing the name of our corporation. We will continue to run the 150 projects we run throughout the year to serve the St. Paul community.
As Ms. Nelson says, the price of standing by our principles just went up. Christine Kraft's retrial had been going on in Joplin, Missouri this month. You might remember that last year, Ms. Kraft won a $475,000 judgment against the TV station she'd worked for. She had charged that the station was less than honest in spelling out the conditions under which she was hired. The judge in the case threw out the award a few months later and ordered a retrial. Last Thursday, the jury returned its latest verdict. And Joe Spencer told us what it was.
Christine Kraft has been awarded $225,000 in actual damages and $100,000 in punitive damages in her fraud suit against Metro Media. Kraft's attorney, Dennis Egan, asked the jury of seven women and five men for an award large enough to send a message to television management in order to prevent another incident like hers from happening again. But the total of $325,000 was far less than the $3.5 million Kraft originally asked for. Metro Media will appeal. Joe Spencer, ABC News, Joplin, Missouri.
Chrysler Corporation was in court this week to fight the proposed car-making venture General Motors plans with Toyota. Richard Goodyear is Chrysler's attorney.
We would not object to a joint venture between GM and Suzuki, or GM and Isuzu. We have a Japanese partner ourselves, and that relationship is important to us. What we do object to is these two huge companies, GM and Toyota, joining up to violate established United States antitrust law.
Chrysler says the joint venture would have a devastating effect on competition in the automobile industry. The FTC tentatively approved the plan last month. The United Steelworkers Union filed two suits this week against U.S. Steel, claiming that the company backed down on a promise to build a new factory in Chicago. At the same time, blue-collar workers at the Weirton Steel Plant in Weirton, West Virginia, became their own bosses as papers were signed making them the plant's owners. Walter Bisch heads the union at the mill.
We were given what we consider a very golden opportunity here. You know, you look around the industry, what's happened on these plant closings. At least here in Weirton, we was given an alternative. We went out and found an alternative to a downsizing the plant or the sale of the plant. And that's going to, in our estimation and opinion, is going to be the best opportunity that ever happened to the people here in Weirton.
That gets a solid second from the mayor of Weirton, Don Menser.
The plant in itself is, if we don't have Weirton Steel, we're not going to have a city.
Employees took pay and benefit cuts to swing the deal. GM is changing its corporate structure for the first time in 75 years by combining its five-car divisions into two separate groups for large and small autos. Under the realignment, Chevy and Pontiac will make the small cars, while the Buick, Olds, and Cadillac divisions combine to make the large ones. At Ford, an announcement this week that the company will invest $500 million in a plant in Mexico to build a fuel-efficient sports car. The Auto Workers Union claims that it will threaten its members' job security. The last person involved in the Abscam investigation was sentenced this week. Former Congressman Richard Kelly, the only Republican involved in the FBI sting operation of a few years ago, got the lightest sentence, 6 to 18 months. The sentence was stiffer for Rita Lavelle. The former head of the government's toxic waste cleanup program got a 6-month jail term and a $10,000 fine. In addition, Ms. Lavelle has to perform community service while she serves another 5 years on probation.
This entire ordeal has been an unbelievable nightmare. I've been very, very disappointed, and I intend to appeal.
Rita Lavelle is the only high-ranking Reagan administration official to be sentenced to a prison term for a felony committed while on the job. She was convicted of lying to Congress. There was a bizarre case reported in San Antonio this week. The commanding general of an Army Reserve unit was found bound and hanged early Wednesday in a building at Fort Sam Houston. Agent William Dulcich of the FBI.
There was no indication of foul play or violence at the scene. There are no preliminary indications of bruises or marks indicating that the general was involved in a struggle, and that's according to the medical examiner.
There was a note pinned to the general's body which read, "Captured, tried, convicted of crimes by the U.S. Army against the people of the world, sentenced and executed." And Agent Dulcich says another note was found.
It was on the general's desk. It said, 10 January 1984. It is about 11:45 hours, and I started out of the building and caught a glimpse of some people in the building who moved towards the back of the building. I don't know who they are or what they are doing. They were apparently startled. I came back here to call the MPs. However, I cannot get any of the telephones to work.
Was it murder or a cleverly engineered suicide? Again, Agent Dulcich.
A military-type web belt had been looped around the wrists and pulled tight, according to individuals who discovered the body. The possibility of the victim having placed the belt around his own wrist has not been ruled out.
The Reverend Buckner Fanning is the dead man's pastor.
He was in the reserve and was the youngest major general ever to be, the youngest man ever to be made a major general. But he was not in any sort of sensitive spot in terms of security or such as that.
So for now, the death of Major General Robert Ownby raises more questions than it answers. Senator Paul Tsongas shocked his constituents in Massachusetts this week when he announced that he would not run for a second term.
Serving the people of Massachusetts in the United States Senate is a deeply rewarding honor. It is not the kind of work that one walks away from under normal circumstances, but the fact is that my circumstances, however, are no longer normal.
Tsongas is 42 and was considered one of the Democratic Party's brightest stars. But Tsongas says a current bout with cancer forced his decision not to run again, and he wants to spend more time with his family. And politics being what it is, there are already several candidates for the Senate seat that Tsongas will vacate early in 1985. I'll have one final story when World News This Week continues in a moment.
I'm Jim Hartz, asking you to respond immediately when you receive a very important letter from your bank or other financial institution. The letter will ask you to verify your taxpayer identification number, the same number that is on your income tax return and your Social Security card. Because of a new IRS regulation, you must return that correct number, or your bank and other financial institutions will have to withhold 20% of all the interest and dividends you earn on stocks, bonds, treasury bills, even savings and now accounts, beginning January 1st, 1984. In other words, any instrument that pays interest or dividends. Withholding 20% would be inconvenient for anyone, but it could be critically important to those who live off of interest and dividend income, like many senior citizens. For more information, just talk with your local banker. This is a public service message from the American Bankers Association.
Now that it's been decided that the Washington Redskins will defend their Super Bowl title against the Los Angeles Raiders, the scramble is underway for seats for next Sunday's game. But the Civil Aeronautics Board warns, if you're flying a charter to Tampa, make sure there's a ticket waiting for you.
We have had instances where people have gotten on planes and gone to the Super Bowl city and ended up watching the Super Bowl from their hotel or motel simply because they didn't read the contract, or they got a false impression that the tour operator had a ticket.
And the CAB's Alan Pollock says,
the charter tour is supposed to include a game ticket, and you don't receive it, you're entitled to a refund of the entire package price when you return from that trip.
As they say, let the buyer beware. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Gil Lungen, directed by Aaron Pilchick. Engineering by Cy Kantrowitz and Larry Farina. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.